In the fifth chapter, where we briefly read Paul's words about freedom, a slightly different kind of freedom than that we celebrate on the 4th of July, hear the word of God. For freedom, Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery. For you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another. For the whole law is summed up in a single commandment: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Pray with me. O Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, you who are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. When Catherine Lee Bates was a little girl, her mother gave her a red leather diary, and she began keeping a journal. And from then on, her life centered on words. Later, she would write children's books, travelogues, works of literary criticism, and poetry. Catherine Lee Bates grew up in Falmouth, Massachusetts, by the sea, not far from where the Pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock. She was born in 1859, just before the beginning of the Civil War, and her age could not have completely sheltered her from the ravages of that bloody conflict. Anyone who lived through the Civil War would be forever touched by the losses in families and communities, by the presence of veterans who had been permanently wounded in the conflict, by the sacrifice of so many to end slavery and preserve the Union. At age 18, Catherine was admitted to a new college for women, Wellesley. She excelled in academics, received her degree, and then went to teach high school. In 1885, Catherine returned to Wellesley as a professor of English, and 6 years later, she was named chair of the English department. That was 1891. And just 2 years later came the series of events that would lead her to craft the most moving, powerful, and I believe the most faithful expression of the hopes and dreams of our country ever written. Colorado College invited Catherine to teach summer school in July of 1893. And Catherine, an adventurous young woman of 34, who would later travel to Europe and Egypt and the Middle East, jumped at this marvelous opportunity. So it was that Catherine boarded a train and headed west. The first stop, Niagara Falls, a sight which never fails to amaze. And you'll not be surprised to know that Catherine wrote a poem about the falls that ended with the words, "Columnar mist and glistening rainbow play, a splendid thrill of glory and of peril." Then the train came to Chicago, right here, our own Chicago, where Catherine stayed in the Oak Park home of another Wellesley professor, Catherine Coman, who was Catherine Lee Bates' lifelong friend. Catherine Coman, a teacher of history and economics, was deeply concerned about issues of justice. The two Catherines were among the 27 million people who came to Chicago in 1893 for the World's Fair, known as the Columbian Exposition, which celebrated the 400th anniversary of the discovery of the New World by Christopher Columbus. The popular book, The Devil in the White City by Eric Larson, tells the amazing story of the event, which, against all odds, captivated the nation and put Chicago on the international map as a city deserving of respect and recognition. Many saw their first electric lamp there. New inventions such as the zipper went on display. And the Ferris wheel made its debut, and not just any Ferris wheel. This one could hold 1,200 people and was more than 250 feet high. That photograph you see there is actually compares the World's Fair Ferris wheel on the left with the Ferris wheel that's currently at Navy Pier. Which one's bigger? The two Catherines, though, they had to wait until their trip home back through Chicago to ride the Ferris wheel. The lines were so long. Most impressive by far, however, was the spectacular array of huge buildings housing exhibits of electricity and anthropology and fine arts, machinery and culture from around the world. Just the photographs alone are entrancing. The magnificent classical-styled buildings with columns and sculpture surrounding huge man-made lagoons with boats taking passengers from one side to another, and also around the wild island that still exists in Jackson Park today on the south side. The buildings were not meant to be permanent, so they were covered with a thin white plaster that shone with a dazzling white, even in the daylight. Only the Museum of Science and Industry remains on the south side, near the University of Chicago, the one structure that was built to last because its purpose was to house treasures of art from around the world. Imagine a whole campus of buildings like the Museum of Science and Industry, and you begin to get the picture. It became known as the White City. Photographs today reveal an alabaster city gleaming in the dark, full of mystery and beauty and allure. Of course, all was not well behind the scenes at the White City. The banking industry was in trouble, and good people were out of work. That certainly sounds familiar. Crime was rampant. Dozens, if not hundreds, of people disappeared during the fair. African Americans could only use the restrooms in the Haiti building. Labor and management were at odds, and the result was often violent. Catherine and everyone else knew it. Still, the White City gleamed like a beacon, luring the civilized world into a new future. It was the 4th of July when Catherine once again boarded a westbound train, and the amber fields of grain seemed to wave at the train. As they passed through western Kansas, Catherine commented in her own journal that she was a better American for such a 4th of July. She arrived in Colorado Springs on the edge of the Rocky Mountains. She taught the summer session and saw the sights, including the wonderful red rock formations of the Garden of the Gods and the old mining town of Cripple Creek. Catherine also visited the grave of Helen Hunt Jackson, who had written about the government's unjust treatment of Native Americans. And the day came when Catherine and her fellow teachers, climbed into wagons for a trip to the top of Pike's Peak, the 14,000-foot mountain that stands watch over Colorado Springs. The road to the top of Pike's Peak is still a bit dangerous, and you can only imagine horses and mules finding their way up one switchback after another, higher and higher past the tree line, until at last they arrive at the top. And there, of course, what a view. Looking to the east, the great plains spreading out like a checkerboard. To the west, mountains as far as the eye could see. Words usually fail at such a sight, but Catherine Lee Bates was a poet, after all. But the words would have to wait. Two of the teachers had altitude sickness, and after only a few minutes at the top, the teachers climbed back into the wagons. But Catherine had had what she called one brief ecstatic look at America from the top. And for her, it was enough. That night, Catherine reflected on what she called the most glorious scenery I ever beheld, and the beginnings of a poem moved from heart to mind to paper. It was 2 years before the professor would submit her poem for publication. A church magazine, The Congregationalist, printed it in the July 4th, 1895 edition. The poem caught on immediately, and it wasn't long before the poem acquired the name that we all recognize. Over the years, she would change the words slightly because many wanted not only to speak her words, but to sing them. And while Catherine kept the copyright on her poem, the only money she would ever take for her immortal words was the small original fee that she received from that church magazine. "It's not work to write a song," she said. "It is great joy." Catherine Lee Bates wrote not just a poem, not only a song, but a prayer for America that is as timely today as it was when it was first written. As you sing her words at the close of the service today, perhaps you will have a new appreciation for them. O beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain, from sea to shining sea. Catherine begins in wonder for the beauty of our country. One can sense the awe, the gratitude for this wonderful land, which is truly a gift that none of us have earned or deserve. O beautiful for pilgrim feet, whose stern impassioned stress, a thoroughfare for freedom, beat across the wilderness. Catherine was born in the land of the pilgrims and had followed the path of settlers across the West. She knew herself to be the beneficiary of their hardships, as are we. And she recognized that the beauty of America goes beyond the land to its people and their struggles for freedom. America, America, God, mend thine every flaw. Confirm thy soul in self-control, her liberty in law. Catherine had witnessed struggles for justice up close and recognized that America had not then, nor have we yet, fully achieved our ideals. And Catherine Lee Bates seems to be something of a prophet, for she declares the need that we see so desperately in our own time to find the delicate balance between freedom and self-control, between liberty and law, between the welfare of the individual and the common good. And she asks that God will be at work in us to see and to repair our national shortcomings. God, mend thine every flaw. O beautiful for heroes proved in liberating strife, who more than self their country loved, and mercy more than life. Catherine looked back to the conflict of her time, the Civil War, as we look to the conflicts of our own time, and expressed the gratitude of a nation to those who have given the last full measure of devotion to our country. Many of whom, in her time, gave their lives in the hope of gaining freedom for people of another race, and also for those of whom in our time continue to risk their lives for our freedoms. America, America, may God thy gold refine till all success be nobleness and every gain divine. Again, Catherine Lee Bates seems to be a prophet for our time, calling us to a different definition of success than wealth or the accumulation of material goods. We're not to measure success by worldly standards, but instead by God's standards. And so again, Catherine asks God to make us a better nation, to refine our gold, she says, to take the freedom and justice we've thus far attained to an even higher level. Perhaps that level, that fulfillment of freedom that the Apostle Paul described as loving our neighbors. O beautiful for patriot dream that sees beyond the years, thine alabaster cities gleam undimmed by human tears. Here is a vision of America in the future, of a white city that gleams not with temporary white plaster, but rather with the fullness of life, a community for all in which there are no human tears. These words echo not only the promise of the white city of the 1893 Columbian Exposition, but the promise of the heavenly city, the New Jerusalem, that we read about in the 21st and 22nd chapters of the book of Revelation that we heard about last Sunday, the city that shall know neither tears nor pain nor death. And then the last verse concludes, as did the first, America, America, God shed his grace on thee and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. The word shed fascinates, doesn't it? One sheds tears, one sheds blood, But here God sheds his grace on our country. Catherine suggests that America is a gift from the heart of God. America as a land, America as a people, America as a vision and a hope and a promise of what human life meant by God could be. And how do we live up to that vision, to that hope, to that promise? By seeking brotherhood, sisterhood, servanthood, from the east to the west, from sea to shining sea. Today is the 117th anniversary of the arrival of Catherine Lee Bates in Colorado. And this year, then, is the 117th anniversary of the writing of America the Beautiful, which means that America the Beautiful is exactly one half as old as our nation. Today, July 4th, 2010, we again celebrate the gift that is our country, our land, our people, and the vision that is not so much ours as it is a promise that has been entrusted to us for the benefit of generations yet to come. For a long time, that vision has been a source of hope not only to our own people, but to our world. And in America the Beautiful, Catherine Lee Bates, an American prophet, calls us to prayer and calls us to action, to claim anew that heritage. May we do just that as citizens and as people of faith.